Hi, good afternoon everyone. Rajiv Escana for immigration.com, Law Office of Rajiv Escana PC. This is a community conference call. Today is September 30th, 2010. This call is being recorded. Anybody who does not want their voice to be recorded should hang up now. The call will be publicly available. So if you want to keep your identity and the details of your case confidential, do so. You can make up a name as you talk with me. By attending this call, neither you nor we are obligated in any way to represent or be represented by each other. Okay, with that said, let me get started first on the questions that have been posted. I think it should take me about half an hour to 40 minutes at the most to finish up with those. And then we'll have enough time to go over questions of everybody who's posted their issues on our forum. And probably still enough time left to take up new questions as well. First question is from Mehtajit, who's a Canadian citizen working on H-1B visa. Wants to open an LLC and be a passive partner investor. He will not be involved in day-to-day operations, will not take any payroll. Partners will handle everything. Can I put my name as partner? Yes. Yes. Okay. Here is the problem. This issue has not been brought before USCIS too frequently. Personally, this is my view. I don't see how they can find fault with somebody who wants to be a passive partner. I think your document, your partnership document, should make it very, very clear that your capacity would be purely as a passive partner. I don't see any problem with you taking, I think they are called Schedule K, income, if they have, you know, any kind of income profits to be distributed amongst partners, I think taking that should be fine. But it's very, very important that you document that you are a passive partner. You do nothing. You don't sign checks. You don't participate in management of the business at all. Okay. To me, this is almost like buying stock in IBM on the stock market. It is not illegal for an H-1 holder to buy stock. It may be illegal for him to day trade, but it's not illegal for him to buy stock or her to buy stock. So why should it be illegal for you to be partner in a passive partner in a company that's smaller than IBM? Okay, I think it should be okay. But again, no sharp, distinct laws on this that I know of. Okay. Next question is Aruchan. Wife had an H-1B visa stamp. Petition expired May 2009. However, she's entered USA on H-1 during August 2008. Currently in India and planning on pursuing H-1B. So question is she subject to the quota? Well, here is the rule of thumb. If she has not been outside USA for more than 1 year, outside USA for more than 1 year, during the time she had an H-1, she should not be subject to the quota. Okay. Now, whether she can transfer the same H-1B petition or not, that I don't believe, you will not call it a transfer. The question is really whether she is subject to the quota or not. Okay. And the quota is triggered by her being physically outside USA during the H-1 tenure, physically outside the USA, okay? Now, there is something called the remainder option. So, let's say I got my H-1 approved for 3 years. I never came to USA. I stayed out after 1.5 years. I want to come back again. I have a choice to get an H-1 for the remaining 4.5 years total, okay, and not be subject to the quota, or be subject to the quota and get H-1 for 6 years. I hope I'm making myself clear. If not, you can always talk to me at the tail end of this call. So, once again, if she's physically outside USA for more than 1 year, and there's time remaining on her H-1 approval, which is not, she would be allowed the remainder. If she was outside USA for less than 1 year after the H-1 approval, she came in on an H-4, I believe she should not be subject to the quota. Okay. But in any case, this debate may be entirely theoretical, because right now the quota is not an issue. There is still plenty of quota left. Okay. Next question, PDV underscore 69. This is Dr. Vishisht. He is a physician in training. And he did 3 years of residency training in internal medicine, 1 year job as a hospitalist, then 3 year fellowship training in hematology oncology. Dr. Vishisht, I have a lot of physicians in my family. Both my older brothers are physicians. In fact, my oldest brother is an internist. And he's got the same subspecializations as you do, hematology, oncology, gerontology, and a bunch of others. So I understand exactly how the process works, and we also represent a lot of physicians and hospitals all over the country, as well as healthcare systems. So you have a PERM approval. Your I-140 has also been approved. Okay. Now the hospital is holding your green card. Question is, can I work both as a full-time hospitalist with the hospital and part-time oncologist with another employer? Yes, you can. What you need to do is, you will need to do a concurrent H-1 with the second employer. What is the minimum number of hours per week that I need to work for the hospital in order to qualify for full-time criteria to satisfy the green card sponsored job? Well, first of all, Doc, green card job is a job in the future. If you were to leave the hospital altogether and they were to still hold the intention to hire you back and you to be hired back, you could just go your merry way until time comes to either transfer your green card to somebody else, which you can. You would have to redo your green card if you're going to go in as an oncologist. You have to redo your green card and you can transfer the priority date. That's one way to do it. So there are several variations possible in your scene. And normally when physicians are training, they are still in internship, etc., I don't charge them consultation fees. You're welcome to call my office. They'll give you some time to talk with me. You can refer that this telephone call that, you know, this conference call that I told that they'll be able to charge for this. So you can go ahead and do that. But essentially the idea is that you have a bunch of options. You could actually leave the hospital and go all together into your fellowship and finish that first, and then start another green card with a new employer, an oncologist, and transfer the priority date from the old green card to the new green card. This holds true even if the hospital decides to revoke your I-140. It'll become difficult, it'll become problematic to get H-1 extensions, of course, if the I-140 is revoked, but the priority date can still be transferred. Okay. So you should have a future full-time oncologist job offer if you want to start a job, a green card as an oncologist, but there's another problem. The problem is that in order for you to qualify for that job, you must be fully credentialed today, even though the job is in the future. So on the date you file the labor search for the second job, you must be fully credentialed. If you are not, you cannot base your job, your green card job, or your credentials in the future. You can't say, I'll have my oncology fellowship in 2011, so let me start my green card in 2010 because green card is for a future job. Not true. It is for a future job, but you must be qualified for it fully on the date the labor search is filed. Okay. So yeah, of course, you're welcome to consult me, but that's the overall theme where you stand. What do I suggest? Well, I think you need to finish your fellowship, and as soon as you finish your fellowship and become fully credentialed, you can get your H-1 through the new employer, whether as a 40-hour H-1 or a 20-hour H-1 or a sliding scale H-1. Remember, there's no restriction on how many hours you can work as long as it's physically possible. So, of course, in a 40-hour work week, you could go 60 or maybe even 80 hours if you are working that hard. But you can't go 120 hours. That's impossible. Okay. So if you have two H1s going, you can have as many hours as humanly possible attributable to both of them. So you could have two H1s. I know people who've done two H1s for 40 hours each. They're working 7 days a week. That's also possible. Okay. Next question, green card to permanent resident mother. This person, this community member has basically posted two questions. One question is, mother is a permanent resident for about 3 years. She received her green card, applied for me in October 25th, 2008. I see that the processing time has changed to only 5 months. Well, wait a minute. Processing time and priority dates are not the same thing. I'm not sure what the priority date in your category is and which country you were born in, but let's say the priority date is 5 years backed up and the processing times are 5 months backed up, it means you'll still get your green card in 5 years, not in 5 months. The paperwork may be approved and ready to go in 5 months, but you'll have to wait for your priority date to become current. So look at the visa bulletin. That's what decides when you're going to get your green card. Okay? If my mother goes overseas for about 6 months every year and she comes to stay with me in USA and pay for all expenses that came on my taxes, is this okay? Well, wait a minute. If your mother is not living in USA permanently full-time, she could lose her green card. And if she loses her green card, you would lose your right or your ability to get a green card through her. So I'm not sure that's such a good idea. You may want to, again, this is something you can consult with a lawyer, see what your options are, but I don't think it's really feasible. A lot of people feel that if they live in USA 6 months a year, they can maintain their green card that way. That may be true, as long as USCIS does not question you closely. The day they start questioning you closely, their primary focus would be, where do you live? And if, in fact, you live in your home country, or your mother lives in her home country, they can take away her green card. The second question you have is that my brother is a citizen. I have an application pending to him also. Is this going to be a problem? No. You can have green card going through 20 different categories. No problem. You can have green card going through as many categories as you apply for. Whichever comes first, you get that. So it's not a problem at all. It's not going to hurt you. Don't worry. Next question is Neeraj Arora. How can I continue to be eligible for citizenship? Green card holder for about a year. Wife and son are in India. I could not complete the green card process before they returned to India. I've applied for them under the following to join. Now I want to go back to India for about 2 years. Well, if you're in India and they're in India, I think the following to join could be problematic. I do intend to become a U.S. citizen. You should read the instructions on Form I-131 as well as Form N-470. Because if you work for a U.S.-owned company working in any way to enhance the trade and commerce of USA, you might be able to accumulate the time that you spend in India toward your citizenship period. But following to join could become problematic if you fail to be domiciled in USA. That's something you have to keep in mind. So for your citizenship, N-470 is the only way to go. N-470 requires that you must not have traveled outside USA even for 1 day in the immediate 12 months before you file the N-470. So keep that in mind. Okay? Purchasing immovable property, etc., to become U.S. citizen, none of that is that important. It is important, but it is not determinative. Buying a house. See, you have to look at the instructions on 131 and 470. Get yourself a lawyer. They can help you file these two forms. But that's the only way I know how to maintain your residency abroad and still be concerned for citizenship. Okay? Still be accumulating that time for citizenship. Next question, Rockon321 says, I-140 denied. Can I use the same labor cert to file I-140? Generally speaking, yes. Even if the I-140 is denied, The same labor certification can be used to refile a second I-140 if there's a reason for it. Because your appeal time period is already over after the I-140 was denied, you cannot use that priority date unless the I-140 is approved. Okay? I really don't know. Normally, let me tell you this, that 3-year bachelor's degrees, especially from India, are not considered to be equivalent to a U.S. bachelor's degree, no matter whose opinion you get. I have seen a lot of opinions come and go. I have not seen USCIS consistently accept any opinion. A couple of times, they have accepted some opinions, but in the recent past, they have consistently denied all 3-year degree cases as being equivalent to 4 years. So you probably will need at some point to start a new green card. I cannot comment beyond that because I don't know what the language of the labor certification is and what the reason for the denial is. Generally speaking, you can use the same labor cert that was used as a part of a denied I-140 and refile another I-140 using that labor cert. That's no problem. But unless the I-140 is approved, you will not get your priority date. Next question, 485 denied, EAD is still valid. This is from USCIS DC. In my opinion, sir, if the 485 is denied, the EAD is no longer valid. It should not be used. Next question, UK Singha, under EB2 category, I-140 is approved, category is not current. Can I change my employers and take advantage of AC21-2000? Portability only kicks in once the I-140 has been approved and 485 has been pending 180 days. In your case, 485 has not been filed. So the most you can hope to get out of this situation is your priority date. So if you went to a new employer, you would have to start your green card all over again, but you can transfer your priority date as long as the PD is not revoked by USCIS for fraud or for the company going out of business. And only in those two circumstances you lose your priority date. Otherwise, you can carry it forward, even if the employer revokes the I-140. Next question is consult. Who has the following questions? Went for stamping for my third H-1B renewal, was denied in the Section 221G. I had advanced parole, which I didn't renew. Now I'm stuck in India. I also own a home in Chicago. What happens to my 485? The 485 will be denied. Because if you are outside USA and you don't have an H-1B to combat, nor do you have an advanced parole, 485 will be gone. You can apply for consular processing. You can change the pending process to consular processing so you get your green card while you are staying in India. Okay, now the problem here is I would want you to consult with your lawyers, find out what is going on, why was the H-1B denied or declined, does that have any bearing on your green card? It should be a good way to go. Okay. You have a buyer for your house, I would like to travel back, can I get a B-2? Well, very difficult to get a B-2, especially when the H-1B has been denied. You may have to send in some kind of a power of attorney for your house to be sold. If I do go back to U.S. somehow, can I still apply for advance parole? I don't think so. I think unless you can re-enter on H-1, your 45 is pretty much gone. And even if you can re-enter on H-1, there are some issues with the visa denial. Okay, but by and large, if you re-enter using your H-1B visa, you should be able to make a good case for the 485 to be alive. Can I apply for EAD and advanced parole from India? No, you cannot. Next question, I will not try to pronounce this name. It sounds like Hava Dava Java. U.S. citizenship question. Wife applied for her citizenship on 6th June. Got her fingerprinting done 27 July. It's been close to two months, there is no further correspondence in Houston. What should we do? Contact your congressman's office. Contact your congressman's office. This is our second application for N-400. President, previous application was rejected. Now, I don't think that's that big a deal, because if it was rejected just for an early application, that shouldn't cause too much delay. It's easy enough. You should talk to your local congressman's office. And if you don't know how, just go to immigration.com, type in the word congressman in the search box, and the first or the second entry that pulls up tells you how to contact your congressman. Okay? Next question, Vishu 0705. My priority date is March 2006. Approved I-140 485 not yet filed. Palm was for a software engineer role, currently in a non-technical role, so the company does not want to file 485 yet. H1 expires in March 2011, company will not renew it till I move to a software engineer position. Finding it very difficult to find a software engineer role because we've had multiple rounds of layoffs. Am I too late to file a new firm? Well, because your I-140 is approved, you're entitled to 3-year form, 3-year H-1. So, conceivably, you could have a scenario where another employer gets you your 3-year H-1. Once the H-1 is approved, you move over and start a new green card. Even if the I-140 is revoked by the employer, by the old employer, typically INS does not take away H-1 extension that they have already given you. Okay? If my perm is approved, am I eligible for I-140 premium processing? As far as I know, yes. Why not? Everybody who's got an EB-2, EB-3, K-2 perm is eligible for an I-140 premium. If I do not have an approved I-140 by March 2011, do I have no choice? But I just outlined to you what you should do. If I'm not able to find a job within USA and I have to leave the country for a year and come back, can I still port my priority date? Yes, sir. Today's law says if your I-140 is approved, unless it is revoked by INS for fraud or company going out of business, you are entitled to keep the same priority date forever and ever and ever. If I enter the country after 1 year when the clock is reset, will I be subject to the H-1B quota? Yes, you will be. Next question is, Dear 1234, I have done my H-1, H-4 last year because of the market situation. Now, as market is improving, I have applied for H-4, H-1 in regular process with the same employer. Is it safe to change it in premium? I don't see why not. If I apply for premium, are there any chances for query? There are chances for query whether you go premium or non-premium. In fact, most H-1s do get queries. 2, since I've applied change of status from H-4 to H-1, can I work? So can I be on payroll? Well, there are two schools of thought on this. If you ever held an H-1, then you went to H-4, then you apply for H-1 again. One school of thought amongst lawyers says you should be able to start work as soon as the H-1 is filed. Another school amongst lawyers says, no, unless you have an existing H-1, you should not start working until that H-1 is approved. I have not specifically researched this issue for a while. I don't know the answer to this question as per USCIS, but amongst the lawyers, I know there are two schools of thought. So I cannot answer your question whether you can start working or not. You can try finding the information through USCIS or through your lawyers. Okay? Next question, N.A. Krishnan. Need advice on the following thing. H-1 from 2006 to 2009, then labor cert approved in 2007 for the full-time position of database admin. Current priority date is 2007 on EB-3. I-140 approved 2008, H-1B 6 years expired 2009, 3-year extension approved till 2012. 3-year degree in mathematics, 2-year master's degree software, something? Well, I don't know what that degree is. I'm assuming it's computer science or something like that. And if you have 5 years of progressive experience after your master's degree, you should be able to qualify for EB2 and redo your green card and transfer your priority date, if that's what you're thinking. I'm now working as a senior project manager, database and business intelligence. Process of transferring my H-1B to new employer. See that as pay stubs. Okay. Let me know procedure for transfer. H-1B transfer procedures, I mean, I don't know what to tell you. Basically, the new employer files an H-1. That's it. And for the EB-2, what you should do is you should refile your form. And if you have BS plus 5 years experience, well, in your case, 3 year bachelor's degree plus 2 years master's degree combined, because they are in similar fields, mathematics and computer science, you should be able to combine them. You may be able to get an EB2. The company wants me to work as a senior manager. What job title should I use in order to protect my priority date? Priority date is carried across all kinds of job titles and all kinds of categories, from EB3 to EB2, no problem. Remember, labor certifications are filed under penalty of perjury. So whatever you do, you've got to do it truthfully. You can't change your facts to suit a favorable outcome. You have to go with the truth. But the truth is in your favor anyway. You can have any title, and you can still file for EB2. As long as the job requires a bachelor's plus 5 years type of profile. Okay. How much is it going to cost for H-1B transfer, priority date, porting, green card, AC-21, EB-3? Well, I don't know how much it's going to cost. That's like asking, you know, well, let me rephrase that. Every law firm has their own fees. Our fees are on our website. If you go to immigration.com, look at the right-hand side panel and click on our fees, you will get to that page where it tells you what we charge. How long it would take, it all depends. There are too many variables for me to state definitively how long it will take. For example, the perm could be as little as 2 months after you file, or as much as 2.5 years if you get audited. So there are too many variables. I really don't know what to tell you. But overall, that's the profile of what you need to do. Mohan312, part-time job after I-45. After 180 days of I-45, can an H-1B visa person work part-time job in addition to regular full-time? You see, if you go on to EAD, Mohanji, then you're no longer on H-1. You can do that. But I have normally advised people to keep their H-1 alive. If you go to my blog, you will see my comments on that, why I say that. In case if she goes out of status because of unauthorized employment for more than 180 days, will going out and coming in with a valid visa nullify the problem? No. Look, once your 485 is filed and you accumulate 180 days of unauthorized employment, you cannot nullify it by going out and coming back in. You can withdraw that 485 and refile another one. That's allowed after coming back in. But it will not take away the taint on the existing 485. Going out and coming back in washes away earlier taints, but not on the pending application. Okay? So if you came back in, you would have to withdraw and then refile the 485 if your priority date is current. Next question is Shrikant Reddy, US. I've been working on EAD at one of my company clients' location in X state as a programmer past few years that I own my home. Moving to Y state, personal reasons. Work from rental home, which is fine with my client. The client does not have a location at Y state. Is there any legal restrictions working on EAD from home office? No. If you're working on EAD, you can work from anywhere. Should I change my temporary address on my payroll? I don't know the answer to that question. It's more a question for your accountants than for your lawyers. You can check with your lawyer, with your accountants what you need to do as far as the state of residence is concerned. As long as you have a permanent job with your employer, The fact that you're working temporarily for a year from some other place should not be a problem. Okay. Next question is from Kwame Afori, who's got an I-751 concern. Sir, your case is complicated enough for me to very strongly recommend you get a local lawyer, wherever you are. I really cannot give you advice about the I-751 denial, where the facts have become so complex that your wife went in. I reviewed your posting. She went in and they were so hard on her, they made her cry. I mean, some of this is very distasteful, I can see that. But there are so many complicated facts in your case. It is absolutely impossible for me to give you good advice in the time that we do have, and with the kind of lack of detail that I have, you will need to talk to a lawyer, and I would want you to go to a local lawyer where you are. Not just, this is one of the situations where a lawyer may have to physically go with you to USCIS. 99% of cases, that's not an issue, okay? But there are cases where I do recommend getting a local lawyer. Let me take a quick look at what other things you asked me. My wife and I do plan to appeal this. Also, divorce is inevitable. Should we withdraw the petition? Let me not get into that because this is definitely something you need to talk to your lawyer about. The officer threatened my wife with jail time and fines. I think this is a serious enough matter. You need to talk to a lawyer in detail. Please don't try to jerry-rig it yourself. This is a serious issue. So you must get yourself a lawyer locally and talk with them. Well, folks, I look like I'm done with all the questions. Let me make it so that people can talk with me about the follow-up they have on the questions that are already posted first. Just one second. As soon as I figure out what am I supposed to do, give me a moment. All callers. To speak with me, press star 6 on your phone, please. Star 6.
Hi, Rajiv. Can you hear me?
I can hear you.
Yeah, this is with regard to question number 14.
Okay.
So you said that if we go ahead and get a different job with a different title, we can still do a 3-year extension today?
Yes, of course.
Even though the I-40 was approved under a petition that is not going to be related, which is...
Yeah, it is possible to do that, and we do it all the time, where the earlier job, I-140, was approved, and the next job, employer as well as the job title are totally different, we can still get H-1 extension. So far, we haven't had any problems.
Okay, and the follow-up to that is, in a previous question, you did say that the only instance when your I-140, you cannot carry over your prior date is if it was revoked or the company goes out of business, right?
Let me rephrase that. You are right, but only half right on the second part.
Okay.
If the only time you cannot carry the priority date forward is if I-140 is revoked by USCIS for any one of the following two reasons. One, fraud, and two, company going out of business.
Okay. What about company being acquired by another company or it
no problem.
Into two pieces?
No problem. And even if the company went out of business and USCIS did not revoke the I-140, you carry your priority.
All right. Okay.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
Hi, Rajiv.
Yes, ma'am.
Can you hear me?
I can hear you fine.
Yes. I have three questions. Should I wait till the end or can I ask this right
now? Let me see. We don't have too many people today. So we should be able to get to you very quickly. The format is I want to answer the questions of people who already posted. So hang on one second. Well, your name is Kate, you said, right?
My name is actually Shiva.
You can make it up. I don't care.
Okay. So yeah, I want to stay anonymous.
Let's call you Kate, okay, since that came to my mind somehow.
Okay.
Folks, anybody else before I get to Kate's question?
Hi, Rajiv. It's Jivesh Khanna. And I have a question number 14.
Yes, sir.
Okay. My question is, the letter they gave me, it says, based on the documents you have submitted to us and the information entitled in interview with American Consular Office in Delhi, we are not able to issue you an H-1B temporary work visa because your petitioner does not appear to be either able or willing to provide qualifying employment in the United States in accordance with the appropriate laws and regulations.
Yeah.
So now my case is, I did my education here. I'm here from last 10 years. And this was my third extension. And I used, means I got an advance parole last time in 2007. I never used it. I am on my EAD and H-1B. I just got my H-1B approved in June this year. So I thought like this time also I'm going to get a H-1B stamping. But this time they denied me. Only problem when they asked me in the interview, I told them like, hey, my company is from Jersey, but I have a house and my mailing address is Chicago because they are where my house is. So that thing they hold on. So do you think like what are my chances? Because now I can go for H-1.
Hang on, let me tell you this. In the last 3 days, this is the third case I have heard.
Okay.
In one case, I was called by a New Jersey company where they had the same issue. Second case, one of our existing clients has had the same issue. And third case is you. So it appears to me to be a very insufficient reason to deny somebody H-1 saying it does not appear your employer is willing and able. Let me explain to you what happens next. What will happen next is your case will be sent by the State Department back to USCIS. USCIS will then send a notice of intent to revoke to your employer. They will say during the interview for the visa, information was developed whereby we think that this case should be denied, etc., etc. How do you respond? And they'll give them 30 days to respond. If your employer is able to convince USCIS that the case is approvable, it should be approvable. They will send back the paperwork of approval to the consulate. You take your visa interview and come back. Okay? So, only problem is it will take a long time. Now, during this time, if you can outsource the work to India and work from there, great. Okay? But you have to wait for this. And I would advise that your employer should contact the congressman.
Okay, so do you think I should apply for another H-1B with another company or just wait?
You can do that as well. There's no harm in doing that.
Okay, but then what will be my status for my I-485? Which
you'll
is
have to refund that. Of that, I'm fairly convinced.
Okay.
Okay?
No problem. Thank you.
You're welcome. Good luck.
Rajiv, this is regarding question number 16.
Yes, sir. Go ahead.
Yeah, see, I have my 140 approved and then...
Yeah, I know your question. Anantha, I have it in front of me.
Yeah, I'm on 7th year extension, which is valid up to 2012.
Right.
In this period, can I do it? Can I transfer it?
I just said that. Yes, you can. You can transfer, but I would not want you to go to the new client, the new employer until the H-1 is approved.
Okay. So I can do the H-1 transfer, no problem.
Yes, sir, you can.
Okay. And then with the priority filing, how long it will take if you do priority filing?
You mean premium processing, right?
Yeah, premium processing.
Anywhere from normally 2 to 6 weeks.
Okay.
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 Good luck to you, sir.
Thank you.
Hi, Rajiv, this is regarding question number 10.
10. Let me just get to that question 1 second. Yes, sir, I see it. USCIS.
Yeah, it's my green card was to my wife, so I was a derivative. I had I was on H-1. Then
right.
I moved to AD for some reason because I was not able to maintain the H-1.
Right.
And but they denied, I saw the status online, and they denied the 485.
Right.
And in the meantime, while I was on EAD, I filed for the new green card processing.
Right.
And also I recently filed for the 485.
Right.
So,
I have already answered your question. I have said that in my view, the EAD is gone.
Yeah, I have a second question basically. The current 485 application that I filed, will it have any problems because my previous 485 was denied?
Yes, sir. I think it will because if you filed 485 more than 180 days after your H-1 expired, okay, if your H-1 expired and you waited more than 180 days to file your 485, USCIS will deny your second 485 because when you filed your 485, you were not in status. You were merely in authorized period of stay.
Is EAD, right?
That's right.
Oh, okay.
Okay? Which just basically means you should go get yourself an H-1 visa stamp, come back in on H-1, and then refile your 485 in your priority date discussion.
Okay.
Okay?
All right.
Good luck.
Thanks.
Hope anybody else? All right, Kate, go ahead, please.
Hi, Rajiv, how are you?
Good.
Yeah, my husband holds a green card and an Iranian passport, and he lives here in America with me. What happens if you should take the plane from America here and arrive at an international airport and he realizes that he lost his green card and Iranian passport? What will they do to him?
It'll be complicated because without the passport as well as the green card, it'll be very difficult to establish his identity. And the fact that he's from Iran doesn't help him either. So ultimately, he'll make it back. What they can do, he'll go to the local U.S. consulate and inform them that he is who he says he is. They can take his fingerprint, check his identity. They can issue him a returning resident permit, and they can issue him a travel document so he can come back to U.S.
A travel document? Okay.
Yeah. They'll, they'll give him a returning resident permit. I think it's called SP1. Okay? And they will...
How long does that take? One day?
Several months.
It takes several months?
Several months. At least 3-4 months.
For how many months, though?
For how many months? It will take them that much time to issue that. And I think once it's issued, it gives them a certain number of months to travel to the U.S.
Okay, so he would be over there for several months and not over here?
Yeah.
Okay, and you don't know how many months? 9, 12?
Cannot answer that question because there are so many variables. Especially what I'm concerned about is because he is an Iranian, they might have to go through some extensive security checks, etc., to verify his identity. Eventually, he'll make it back, but how long it'll take is anybody's guess.
So how long? Okay. And the second question is, if he arrives at the international country holding an Iranian passport and green card in his hands, and he didn't know that he needed a visa for that country until he arrived and they told him, you know, at the airport, what will they do to him and what should he do?
That depends upon that country. Typically, any country that does not permit people to enter without a visa for that country, they'll ask him to return.
Okay, and they will probably deport him.
They will deport him from the airport itself.
Okay, which happens within an hour, 5 seconds.
Yeah, normally it depends. See, this is something I'm not qualified to answer because there are so many variables. It depends upon the country. But typically, like in USA, I can speak from the U.S. angle.
Uh-huh.
If USA finds somebody not admissible, they will tell them, you wait in the lounge and you're returning back in the next flight.
In the next hour or whatever.
Whatever it takes, 2 hours, 20 hours, 15 hours, whatever it is, you stay in the terminal and they return you back from there.
Okay, and the last question, I wrote it down here. And then let's say he goes to the international airport, let's say Dublin, I don't know, in Ireland.
Right.
And he decides to visit there, and he lost his passport on the airplane before he entered there. But he has all his documents. He has the national security number, his green card, the hotel booking, everything. What happens?
It depends upon the laws of Ireland if they will allow him entry under what terms.
But he doesn't have a visa.
It's totally up to the Irish authorities. If this were to happen in USA, and if he were coming from a European country, for example, I'm pretty sure we would let him in on something called a parole, which will give him about 30 days to stay in the country and get his paperwork together and report back.
30 days, okay.
Yeah, but that's USA. I don't know what Ireland would do. I don't practice Irish law, so I have no idea.
Okay.
Okay. And I would be surprised if Ireland is any less strict than USA because Ireland has had problems of its own.
What do you mean?
Well, because of the civil unrest or, you know, the infighting that they had in Ireland.
Uh-huh.
So I'm sure they are very careful with their security as well.
So most likely they deport him immediately, right?
Difficult to say. I really don't know the answer to that question. You might be better served by calling either an Irish lawyer or the Irish authorities on this issue.
Okay.
Okay.
Okie doke.
Good luck.
Okay, thank you, Reggie. God bless.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Folks, anybody has any questions? Oh, very good. This was a good conference call indeed. Thank you.
Hello?
Yeah?
I have a quick question. I'm Raj.
Yeah, Raj.
My question is that I have my labor approved priority date of November 2008, EB2 category,
okay.
And my 140 has been pending for last 14 months. Also, I'm applying for H-1B renewal. We applied on time, and right now my I-94 has expired. So, and we are getting a series of RFEs. So, if my H-1 gets rejected, does it affect my I-140? Can I go back to India and apply for a consular processing when the priority date is current?
So your question is, if my H-1 is denied,
yes,
and I have to leave USA, do I still have the right to do consular processing?
Yes.
You do. As long as the job is still there for you, okay, and you intend to take that job, yes, you can go ahead and do consular processing outside USA.
Okay, and also if I'm out of the US, does that affect the 140 processing?
I-140 should not be affected by being outside USA, no, sir.
Okay, and I can still apply for premium, right?
I don't see why not.
Okay. Yeah, thanks, I guess.
You're welcome. Good luck.
Yeah.
Good luck. Folks, all done? Okay, well, thank you for your time, and I'll see you maybe in a couple of Thursdays. Bye-bye.